Welcome to Bed Crime Stories Podcast. I'm your host, T. Hi, guys. Hope you're having a wonderful day. If you're new here, a warm welcome. Thank you for checking out my channel. All I ask is that after listening to and or watching the video, if you find you enjoyed it or learned something, smash that like button and consider subscribing. Now, let's dig in. Good morning. How are you? I hope you're having a wonderful day. Hey, just a reminder that it's hard to make a living on YouTube, so if you enjoy the work I do, please consider a Patreon membership, a channel membership, perhaps a super thanks from time to time. All of that stuff can really make a difference. All right, I'll shut up about that now and get on with the content. We heard yesterday that 22-year-old student Riley Strain did not have water in his lungs and that his body was found face down in the Cumberland River, without his pants, without his wallet, and without his boots. His heartbroken family ordered a second private autopsy due to these strange circumstances. The first autopsy cited accidental causes as the reason for Riley's death. The family analyzed photos of Riley taken the night he disappeared, and they seemed to reveal that he had his wallet in his front pocket. It doesn't say if it was the front pocket of his jeans, I'm assuming so, and was wearing Justin's style square nose cowboy boots. Chris Dingman, the family spokesperson, said this: the family did have a second autopsy, actually in Tennessee, following the Metro Nashville autopsy, from a private independent company that does that. The original autopsy came out just like theirs, meaning just like the one that Metro Nashville did, with no obvious signs of trauma, as in weapons, guns, or knives. According to Dingman, the cops initially had a person of interest they wanted to speak to, but they later changed their minds and instead were interested in another person. Dingman is quoted in the New York Times as saying this: "We know from the homeless people that live there that was the person that was supposedly on the road when Riley fell into the bushes or whatever happened." Chris Dingman also shared that he believed there was someone who had information about Strain before he disappeared. He said, quote, "I think there's somebody out there that knows what actually happened that night," end quote. By the way, if you hear banging or odd noises, it's because we're having some work done and we've got construction people over here, so I can't control that and I prefer to record rather than not record. So I would say that there are definitely questions now about possible foul play, although the official line seems to still be that this was an accidental death due to falling in the water and perhaps whatever Riley was under the influence of. None of the toxicology findings have been released. It's unclear if those tests are even complete. Like the family, I find all of these details really perplexing, so I decided to do some research. Let's start with drowning. What does it mean, medically speaking? How long does it take to drown, etc.? According to the American Academy of CPR and First Aid, it takes only a few seconds to drown, but it can take up to 3 minutes for a person submerged in water to become unconscious. And during that period, their airway may be blocked by fluid in the lungs or mouth, making breathing difficult or impossible. When someone's head goes underwater, their airways close off due to an automatic reflex. The airways, as you know, need to be open in order for a person to breathe. Well, at least to breathe naturally and to keep their oxygen levels up. Without air or oxygen, something called hypoxia can set in quickly, causing brain damage and even death. FYI, hypoxia just means an absence of enough oxygen in the tissues to sustain bodily functions. When someone is drowning and in water or in contact with water, the body's instinct is to hold its breath. You can try to hold your breath as long as possible, but eventually the body will start to panic and will begin taking on water. If a person struggles and then gasps for air, they're filling their lungs with both air and water. No bueno. Now, if a person can avoid panicking completely, like 100%, and good luck with that, they can calm themselves down enough so that they don't inhale any water. Maybe Navy SEALs can do this, but I doubt the average person could. But eventually, if you're still submerged, you're gonna lose control. Being in cold water also generally leads to hypothermia, which makes it hard to swim or even tread water. Hypothermia occurs when you lose heat faster than your body can produce it. This leads to dangerously low body temperature. Now let's talk about how alcohol affects one's ability to swim in order to avoid drowning. I mean, you can probably guess, booze isn't good for swimming or staying afloat. Alcohol decreases your coordination and reaction time, which makes swimming all the more difficult. Note to self, try not to be drunk while around water, especially large, cold bodies of water with swift currents and or dangerous undertows. Dude, I once went sailing to Cuba for 2 months, and I'll tell you what, I respect the ocean. It's so much bigger than we are. Don't kid yourself, we are not Diane Nyad. We saw that Riley could barely stand up straight in some of the surveillance footage. He was clearly under the influence of something. If it was alcohol, alcohol can also increase your risk of hypothermia and lower your body temperature. Double whammy, people. Booze also dehydrates you, which makes cramping more likely. Riley would probably have been fighting all of this in the condition he was in if he was alive when he went in the river. Experts say if you end up in the water, you can roll on your back so that none of the wet stuff enters your nose or mouth. Keep your orifices closed. Yes, I'm trying to throw in some light humor because this is a very heavy topic. I'm not trying to disrespect Riley. Then extend your arms straight out on either side of the body for balance. This is what I love about true crime. We can learn things that are practical tips for survival. Now, there are several types of drowning. The top two are wet drowning, which is the most common. It occurs when water enters the lungs and impairs the person's ability to breathe. This usually happens when a person is submerged in water and cannot reach the surface. So this causes the victim to get water in their lungs, hence the name wet drowning. There's also dry drowning. In dry drowning, the person's airway closes up due to a spasm, preventing water from entering the lungs. But lack of oxygen still leads to unconsciousness and eventual death. Dry drowning can occur even after a person has been rescued from the water, as the airway can close up several hours after the initial incident. With a dry drowning, water never reaches the lungs, hence the name dry drowning. Of course, a person who's already deceased when they go in the water cannot breathe water into their lungs. Apparently, if someone is submerged after they're already deceased, the alveolar spaces of the lungs will have air trapped in them with no exit, which prevents water from entering the lungs. Now, unfortunately, the signs of drowning are degraded by decomposition, and from what I've read, a forensic diagnosis of drowning is considered one of the most difficult to make. Often, an external examination and autopsy findings are nonspecific and thus inconclusive. So poor Riley, with whatever was in his system, didn't stand much of a chance, and it's not that easy for the person doing the autopsy to be 100% certain that drowning caused the death, or that he fell in the water, or that someone pushed him in the water. And being in the water for nearly 2 weeks would have led to some decomp, even with the water being cold. The Cumberland River's water temperature was in the mid-50s at that time. And I'm talking about Fahrenheit. Typical decomposition changes proceed more slowly in the water overall, primarily due to cold temperature and the anaerobic environment. Anaerobic simply means no oxygen. Look at how much we're learning today. Woohoo! But once a body is removed from the water, another weird word, putrefaction, will likely be accelerated. Putrefaction just means the decay or rotting of the body. Gross, I know, but it's life, or at least the circle of life. Changes after death in the water are affected by the water temperature, the current, and any obstacles or structures the body may have bumped into while in the water. We know Riley was found under a rock 8 miles downstream. Yes, under a rock, according to Chris Dingman, the family spokesperson. I'm not sure what that would have looked like or how that could have happened. We know the body moved downstream. Maybe it was wedged in by a rock. No one has mentioned rocks being used to hold the body down in the water. And I would assume that rocks don't travel with a body. At least large rocks. I mean, originally I heard it was a barge that some workers moved and then the body popped up. But an article I read today said that Chris Dingman stated that it was a rock. Did he get that wrong? Maybe. And any type of predator action post-mortem can cause external defects that mimic injuries. So the forensic pathologists have a lot to consider and analyze. Now, I also read that the position of a body in water is affected by clothing and any personal effects on the body. If the person had drowned, typically the body will initially submerge and assume what's called the drowning position. This is when a person is face down in the water and their arms and legs are floating below them and their torso and derriere are more up on the surface of the water. Riley was described as being face down. The article I read also said that the person's body or clothing could also get caught on rocks, branches, and other objects in the water. Could Riley's pants and boots have come off in the water somehow? Perhaps due to a very swift current? He was thin, and his boots were the pull-on type from what I can see, but to me this seems very unlikely. I'm thinking that maybe he ripped his pants off and his boots off in a desperate attempt not to sink. If he had the ability to think rationally, and who knows, maybe even under the influence, an instinct to survive kicks in. I mean, I really think that when Riley walked by the police officer, he was rallying all his ability to stand upright and speak clearly so as not to attract the officer's attention. But it's also possible that those items, the jeans and the boots, and the wallet were off of Riley before he ended up in the water. His phone's last ping was between 9:55 and 10 p.m. This would seem to indicate that he ended up in the river at around that same time, like right after it. Thus, he likely wasn't hanging out near the river for hours before he ended up in it. How much time would someone need to assault Riley in some way before maybe pushing him in the river? There's not a lot of time for someone with ill intent to come at Riley. Remember, at 9:47 p.m., Riley was captured on surveillance video crossing First Avenue North to Gay Street. He was alive. I wouldn't say he was well, but he was definitely walking and standing upright. He also appeared to be alone. So many different things to consider in this case. What do you guys think? How did his pants and his boots and his wallet end up off of him? And where is his wallet? And why was his bank card found on the embankment near the river? Was it in his pocket? Did someone rob him and then push him into the river? Did they take the wallet but ditch the debit card because they didn't have the PIN? Just when you think that a case has been solved, things can turn up that change the whole look and feel of the case. But if this was down to foul play, why didn't the perpetrator take Riley's watch? None of this stuff can be easy for Riley's family. An accidental drowning is one thing. Details that don't make sense might make the family perpetually wonder what really happened to Riley. Let's hope they get concrete answers at some point so that they can lay their boy to rest in peace, and also so that they can have some sense of peace. Until the next time on Bed Crime Stories.
How you doing, sir?
I'm good. How are you?
Good.